Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Let's go to the call. Oh, cool. Also the saxophone piece. Let me hear the saxophone piece so that we'll get them up to speed. My favorite saxophone piece in the world. That you can find, right? That you can pick up. Oh, I see. There's a short leader. Not the whole thing. It's 10 seconds. There you go. Oh, God, this guy was... I can remember when I first heard this. Me out of my ethnic background, it was so good. The saxophone was so good, it broke my genealogical chain. Oh, I fell in love with jazz because of this music. I got news for you. My father was not a religious man. He was a total atheist. Didn't believe in God. I got to tell you right now. I mean, my mother was a God-believing woman. She's the one who gave me the spark. My father was not. He was from Russia. He wasn't a communist, but he didn't believe in anything, truthfully. He was cynic about politics, cynic about religion. He wasn't one or the other. He was just a practical guy. He did read 5 newspapers every night. I said, what are you reading 5 papers for? He said, I get all opinions from... He's this paper, the Post, is liberal. That paper, I think the Journal was conservative, was right-wing. I don't know. He read them all. Then he decided what he wanted to believe was true. See, that's how you should be. That's how you should be, open-minded instead of a closed-minded left-wing nut, as most of you are. But the point I'm making is the music. So I listened to the jazz music, and I started bringing home Nat Cannonball Adderley, I remember. And I'd play it in the house, then he'd come home. What are you listening to that junky music for? Turn it off. What junky music? I like the music. Turn it off. No junky music in my house. He didn't want to hear it. Then eventually he started to like it. That's what happened. I'd catch him listening to like Ray Charles in the car. I think that's when he told me after that you can't have music in the car because I'm liable to hear what he liked, which was the same music I liked. You know, fathers and sons have their shtick. I miss them all. Holiday time. You know, holiday time is another story. But I told you that we were very, very, very strong-willed people. Like mountain, European mountain people who like learned stoicism over 700 years of deprivation, learned to live on next to nothing. Just eat like, I don't know what they ate, the ancestors in the old country. No wonder they wanted, but they lived long and they didn't want to live long, but they did. Now I want to live long and I can't because of the, you know, it's a paradox. You have everything and you want to live long, but you can't because you're living too high on this food scale. They lived on kasha, which is like a grain, an unseasoned grain. And there's no animal product, because if they killed the animal, they lost milk and cheese. So they had no animal product, maybe once in a while for a holiday. That's why they lived long. They lived grim, horrible lives with mud, like a bad Tolstoy, a bad piece of a Dostoevsky novel. A muddy village with a wagon wheel getting caught in the rut. Horrible. I heard in the old country, I swear, I only learned this recently. I never looked into it. They lived in one room with like smoke coming out of the chimney, and the grandparents, they slept up near the fireplace. Like they had an open hearth that covered the entire room in the middle, because that projected warmth. And the grandparents, they rigged up like a bunk bed right next to the fireplace because they would have died from the cold. That's why I have trouble with heat to this day. I myself prefer the cold. But can I admit to you something I did recently? Am I allowed to admit this on the show? I try always to be stoic to this day, but it doesn't work eventually. Somebody bought me a heating thing that goes under the not a heating pad, a heating sheet that goes under because I don't put heat on at night, okay? I hate the heat. I stuffy. I sleep with the window open, you know, the door, and it gets like 39, 40, 30. It's getting very cold here, and it's damp in Northern California. I hate the damp, but on the other hand, I don't like the heat. So I'm sleeping with the window open with no heat. It's a toss-up. I said, why don't you try a heating sheet? So I get a heating sheet. I put it on. I got sissies. I'm not that good. I put it in the bed. I can't believe it. The aches in my bone in my hand went away from one night in the heating thing. And like a head cold cleared up. Would you believe it? There's a lot to be said for modern conveyances. I got to tell you, next I'm going to try central heating in the house. I may move up to some other modern. No, I'm serious. Yakima, Washington. Dan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, that the saxophone you're talking about, that's a tenor sax.
Right, tenor, not alto sax.
No,
tenor.
I play the alto. That's a little higher. It sings more. But
when they go into that deep, when it goes into the countertone, that's a tenor sax going into what?
Into the lower register of its, there's a octave key. He presses that when he wants to be in the higher register. When he wants to go to that low note you're referring to, he
yes.
lets go of that, and he goes down, he closes his pads, and he goes to the key that he's after. And he can go low if he closes to the note he wants.
But Dan, that was a very 50s thing, that counter low note, wasn't it? I don't hear that done anymore. Does anyone do that anymore?
Yeah, it's done. If you need that note, you just go to it, and they do it on the end of the tunes.
But this guy, Beowulf, who was he? Tex, what was his name? Jesse Tex Powell. Was he a famous sax player, Dan?
Jerry Mulligan was the great baritone sax player.
Oh, I love Jerry Mulligan. You're bringing back memories now.
Kenny,
We had a Dumont television with a great speaker in it. I used to lie in a living room floor in the few hours I had to myself, and I'd listen to a certain jazz show on Saturday mornings for hours, and I'd listen to that sound coming out of that speaker. It was all Jerry Mulligan. It was a great era for jazz.
Baritone sax.
Baritone sax, my God. I always wanted to play that instrument, Dan. I have no facility with music. Would you believe it?
Well, Kenny,
either people do or they don't. I can't play an instrument.
G plays the soprano.
Who does?
There's about five saxophones. They're named after Adolf Sax, the Belgian. He was from Belgium. His name was Adolf Sax.
Do you think I could still learn the saxophone at my age, take up something like, huh? Any age you can learn?
Yes, it's simple.
Which one should I use to start? Which one of them?
I like the alto.
That's the smaller one?
It's the higher of the tenor.
Okay, and then if I do that, then I can move up and get one where I can do a note like that?
You can play all of them. If you can play one, you can play them. They're all fingered the same. It's the size of the horn that makes the difference of the range.
Isn't that something? Well, I appreciate this call, Dan. I'm going to send you a copy of my book, Psychological Nudity, for being so informative. I don't know. People say you should do what you wanted to do when you were young and you didn't get a chance, or you tried it and put it down for whatever things came along. In that light, there's so many things I'd like to try. I mean, but who's going to try it all? Maybe the saxophone could be one of them. That I could try. That I could definitely try. That's a manly instrument, not the flute. Remember, I tried the flute. My father caught me in the basement playing the flute. Did I ever tell you that story? Oh, my God. I went through a phase in college. I got a flute. Because I like Cuban music. And I particularly like the wooden flute that Jose Fajardo played. It was astounding team. Papacheco, Jose Fajardo. There was the Cuban flute. Nobody was as good as them. They would go off on these reveries in the flute that were astounding to me. I remember going to a nightclub in New York called the Palladium, and I'd stand and listen to the flute players in particular. And once I asked Jose Fajardo, I think actually I was in Miami, God knows, years later. I went up to him. I thought he was God. You know how you look up to a musician. They're just people, you know. So I said, oh, Mr. Fajardo, how do you get your inspiration to come up with these particular improvisations? And he says to me, I don't know, he was pulling my leg. He said, I have a lot of birds and I listen to the birdies sing. I don't know if he was kidding me or what. He probably was telling me the truth, because I listen to birds sometimes and I imitate bird sounds. I whistle to them. I'm very good at it. There's another side of me you don't know, a little crazy, I know, to listen to birds and go, my dog loves it too. But if I'm out in the woods walking my dog, and I hear a bird singing, I can mimic the sound very closely. The dog looks at me and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I don't know. Maybe I should take up the saxophone. That might be something to do with my spare time. It might be a nice thing. Anyway, that's one thing. This is Dizzy Gillespie, Night in Tunisia, one of the great jazz pieces of all time. Recorded between 1946 and 1949. This is a guy who was a pioneer. If you understand what bop education means or bop music, just feel it. Anyway, I'm not a music guy, but it's Cubano pop. Well, stop for a minute. Go back to the opening. Oh, just for a minute. Hold on. Now, imagine if you're a kid from a very ordinary background and never heard real jazz music, and suddenly you hear this clarion call, this coming out of nowhere, out of the nights of New York. One night you're driving late, coming over the 59th Street Bridge, and the Silver Cup Bread Factory is still making bread. Can you imagine? Not movies. And the smoke's coming out of this chimney, 3 a.m, and you hear this. And then there's Symphony Sid playing this with his great cigarette voice. And he's telling you it's Dizzy Gillespie, Night in Tunisia. And that's Dizzy Gillespie on vocals and trumpet, James Moody on the tenor saxophone, Cecil Payne the baritone sax. That's John Lewis on the piano, Milt Jackson on the vibraphone, Ray Brown on the upright bass, and Chano Pazzo on the congas and bongos. I mean, it changes your whole life. There are moments that move you into another sphere, breaks your genealogical chain, I gotta tell you. Whatever, turn it off. Nobody got them, talking to myself. Oh, Manteca's actually better on this album. You don't have that, do you have Manteca? No, all right, forget it. I'm already asking for too much.
Savage.
Right now, I have a rare treat for you, which is Orquesta Aragon with one of their great, great pieces called Pare Cochero. Listen to this. It's not yet. Just give me a few minutes. I do so much for you. Bear with me. I know you want to hear me blast Obama. I'm not going to do it right now. Wait till he gets to this point. Orquesta Aragon de Cuba, blah, blah, blah. Just bear with me. Listen to this. Pare. Hey. 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 Now, when you're trapped doing advanced algebra, physiology, anatomy, whatever you're doing, philosophy, and you can get off on this music, you're a lucky person. What is the point of music? It's supposed to lift you out of the ordinary, isn't it? Like any other art. See, whatever. All right, now I'm talking to myself. I'm going to do politics now. No, Blago didn't talk to Obama. How could you not believe that? What, do you believe in Santa Claus? Of course he talked to him about it. I mean, the guy was the governor of the state. The guy took his seat in Congress. Of course they talked. Of course Rahm Emanuel was involved. What's the mystery here? How do you think American politics works? You want me to lay it on long? I'm going to give you a shocker right now. I'll give you a shocker. It would be a disaster for America if the prosecutor got overzealous and tried to destroy Obama right now. How do you like that? It would be a disaster. It'd be the worst thing this country could experience. Are you people, you see, you don't even understand the ramifications of this. What could benefit the country to bring Obama to his knees right now? Tell me the benefit to such a situation. We're in a depression. They're printing money. They've tripled the national debt. The country is flooded with illegal immigrants and sleeper cells. What would the benefit be to destroy Obama's presidency before he begins? There would be no advantage to it, especially when you look at his cabinet. The guy appointed a rather moderate cabinet. In fact, it's more conservative than that moron McCain would have appointed, as far as I could tell. Moron McCain would have gone so far to the left to pander to the NBC, CBS, ABC, CNN, and Fox that it would have been more liberal than this cabinet. I bet, you know, they really ought to leave this alone. You want to go high up on the food chain? then go after Rahm Emanuel. And then you better be ready for a chief of staff that's going to be so far to the left that it'll make Rahm Emanuel look like a right winger. You know, you got to watch out where this goes. Got to watch out where this goes. See, this guy Blago, there's no question in my mind he's a psycho. I watched him the other day when he came out and said, I will fight. This guy's crazy. I mean, it's one thing to have done it. It's another thing to have gotten caught on tape. And then it's a third thing to not listen to your lawyers and get up there and think you're so charming that you can charm the pants off America by saying you're going to fight. And your mother told you to read If on the air. I mean, they must be listening to my show because I'm the only one in the media who's read If over the last 10 years. Nobody in the media has read Rudyard Kipling's If. So there's no question in my mind that the guy loves the show. I mean, I don't blame him, but I think he's a little buggy to have gone out there and done that. The best thing for this guy is to work out the best deal he can, get some kind of great appointment and some sports commission making $400,000 a year, and, you know, do a deal with everybody and get off the stage. Because this is not good for his state. It's not good for America. But I'm a pragmatist at the end of the day. Do you understand this? Puchero, pare, cuchero. Crack dealers are shielded by San Francisco city officials. I don't know how much it's going to take till you realize that the city of San Francisco is not compassionate, that the city transsexuals or metrosexuals, shall I say, who run this city are not doing it out of compassion. They are doing it to shield crack dealers. They're hiding them from federal immigration officials, even though it's illegal to do so and they should go to jail. The head of the youth authority should be in prison. The DA should be in prison. Anyone up and down the chain should be in prison who knew this. I don't understand why the federal government does not move on the city. We need federal intervention here. The city's out of control. We have a homicide epidemic. We have a crime wave. And now we have city officials hiding crack dealers in facilities that cost $7,000 a month, paid for by taxpayers. Starbucks closing 600 stores in the U.S. Unbelievable to me. We're actually in a, I don't know, it's like a shadow depression. I would call it, yeah, steal that. Yeah, steal that now. Put it on your blog. Write your article for NRO. Shadow depression, Michael Savage calls it. Steal this phrase like you did compassionate conservative.
You're listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
It is the Savage Nation. Let me tell you the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile who crashed my Jaguar. But first we have to listen to Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd. Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd on the Savage Nation Desafinado to set the mood and the time. Oh, I know what you're expecting, but you're not going to get it from me. You'll have to go to one of the other talk show hosts to get Obama's a Marxist and McCain is a war hero. If that's what you want from now until November, you're in the wrong dial position. It's over. Leave me alone with it already. I really don't care anymore. I'll talk to you about it after the election. That is, unless there's a revelation here and now. It's enough already. Can we get on with our lives instead of focusing on these narcissistic egomaniacs who want to crash the country into the rocks even further? So please, listen to Desafinado, will you, by Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd. And I will tell you the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile who crashed my Jaguar. So as the music fades away, I want to take you back in time to a childhood story. Of course, it's a teenage story at this point. I had a friend whose father was a shady podiatrist, as you can tell by the title of the story. And he had a weird podiatry practice in the back of his apartment in, I think it was Sunnyside, Queens, somewhere in that area. I have no idea what the man did in the back. He was a very strange father. Everybody was afraid of the guy. you'd go, and he was very tall. The father was very tall. He dressed kind of shabbily, but upscale, but it was all tattered. And he always had a weird look on his face. And when the father was not in the apartment, the son, who became the Anglophile later on to cover up his origins, would take you in his father's podiatry studio, clinic, or whatever it was, office. And he'd say with a snicker, "I want you to see my father's rack," where he stretched people or something. And there was always something weird about this guy's podiatry practice. I don't even know what a podiatrist did. Something to do with the feet, but I think this guy did something with another part of the anatomy by implication. Now you speed the clock up. The son who grows up in the shady apartment with a shady father, who was off-beaten guy, didn't become a real doctor, has to, throw dirt on his origins. So he becomes more Brooks Brothers than anybody we know. He adopts an English accent. And the last I heard, he had married a rich girl, oh, this is a long time ago, and became a banker with the umbrella and the whole deal. Now, there's another element to the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile, which is my Jaguar XK150. Prior to the time that he became a pure Anglophile, he was still my friend, but that's before I left New York. And I had an XK150 Jag that I'll never forget. I love that car more than, well, most cars. Who remembers what car you love and this and that? But when I say I love that car, you got to remember something. We're limited by our language, English. English has one word for love. I love my car. I love my mother. I love my wife. I love my dog. I love this pizza. I love my new shoes. We're stuck with one verb. In Latin, there are 16 verbs for love, each one slightly more descriptive depending upon the type of love we're talking about. So when I say I love the Jaguar, it's not like I love my dog or any of the other things I mentioned. Well, one night we were partying in the podiatrist's son's apartment. The father, I think, was taking advanced rack stretching lessons somewhere in the Grenada. And as kids would do, we got drunk and probably some other things were used at the party, who knows what. And he said, "Hey, can I drive your Jag? It must have been 2 o'clock in the morning." And you're a kid. "Yeah, here's the keys." So he takes the car out on Queens Boulevard, 2 o'clock in the morning in Queens. And, he raced it out as fast as he could go. And his heart's pounding. He's sitting at a traffic light after, he did his long run. The light's red. He stopped. All of a sudden, he looks in this tiny two-inch mirror that the Jags came with. And he sees a car careening right at the rear of the car. But before he could get the car in first, clutch it, gear it, and get out of there, crash, bang, boom, smashed in. The back of the car is broken off. And, of course, I've reversed the story. I think it was his Jaguar, and I was driving it, and I got hit from the rear. I really don't remember at this point whose car it was, but I do know who hit us. To this day, and I'm not making this up, I know the guy's name. I remember it. He was an Iraqi. I swear to you. It was very odd because I didn't know of Iraqis at that time. But he was an Iraqi national with a pure. His name was not Saddam Hussein. I know that. Nor was it one of the junior Husseins. But it was an Iraqi national who crashed the Jaguar and broke its back. And, of course, that was that. Our friendship ended soon thereafter. Yes, it was his car. He came and saw it. And the back was broken off the car. And he started to almost cry. He didn't cry like a sissy, but he wept. And he said, "You broke the back of my car." I said, "I didn't mean it. I was sitting there." And that's the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile. Now play Decifanato, and I'll tell you why I told you that story. Actually, the song has more meaning to me than the story, because I remember when this song came out. I don't know if I can tell that story. Is that illegal? One of the girls in the crowd had a sister who was a Playboy bunny. She was older. She must have been 22. We were 17, 18, 19. Now, I want to tell you, Playboy Bunny then was a Playboy Bunny. Today, it has no meaning. Today, they look like skanks from the lowest levels of the sewer. I mean, you watch that show with that old degenerate bum. I mean, this guy should be... Let's just stop right there. I never saw anything like these skanky broads he has in that mansion of his. What is so interesting about these lowlife bimbos he has with him? But in those days, a Playboy bunny was really something. I mean, they were the top of the heap. At least that's how guys saw her. Who knows what they really were? They probably like every other woman on earth. You know, if they had a good figure, they became a Playboy bunny. As long as they did the right producer meet, you know. Well, this song was very popular at that time, you see, and she was 22. And everybody in the crowd wanted to get next to the Playboy bunny. But I was the lucky one that penetrated the ovum. And on the way home from that particular event, which, of course, I was flying high, I couldn't believe it. I was not in the Jaguar. I was in another car. I was in a Chrysler, which had the Hemi engine, but it was not the whatever. It was a Chrysler New Yorker, an old man's car, but it had the Hemi engine. So I'm driving home from that encounter with the Playboy bunny. And remember, I'm really only a kid. And my mind was certainly not in the car. I mean, where was I? I have no idea. My mind was on cloud nine. Bang, hit from the side by a truck. The car is absolutely totaled. I got to get a tow truck. It's towed home to in front of the house. And I remember selling the car for the engine alone to some hitter kid who was going to take the engine out. We had a long talk about it and use it in a dragster.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Fajardo, Tefoni Agassar. Just playing some of my music from years ago. Just for a minute. Give me a break. Talk about Bernie Madoff, Obama, and immigrants in a minute. I slashed his wrists. Ugh. All over money, you cut your wrists. Found his wrist slashed. Hear this? Hear this story? Wait, let me just hear this riff, then I'll get back to business. Because everyone's off tomorrow. They're cooking a goose, a turkey. I like to see Madoff's goose cook. Put him in the pot. That rat son of a gun. Smirking at everyone, you son of a gun. What you did to your people, it'll take centuries to overcome the anti-Semitism that you're going to unleash, Madoff. You bum, you piece of garbage. Smirking at everyone like you got everyone beat, you piece. Sorry, I just drifting off. You hear what I mean, the bird? That's what Fajardo said to me. He listens to the birds. Maybe he was telling me the truth. Why not? Why not get your inspiration from nature? I've heard birds sound like this. He would climb the scales on that flute. I would want to cry. I feel like jumping up and reaching and jumping onto a cloud. How could anyone do that, I asked myself. I'm stuck eating like a bad meal on a Friday night in a house in Queens. And you get in the car and you drive into the city and you hear this kind of music. You can't believe there's another world like that out there. You know what I mean? Of course, it can mislead you totally, too. There's a lot of people crashed out totally in their lives just following the music and the drugs. I was lucky. I had some controls in me. Centuries, ages of controls built into me. Listen to this. Whatever. I don't go to this music anymore. Maybe I should. They say Eddie Palmieri's coming to town. Some guy, good friend of mine, wants me to go hear him. Hey, Agosar, Michael Savage, Jose Fajardo. So the guy, I linked up a story. It's a tragedy. Hedge fund founder who lost $1.4 billion in Madoff scandal found dead in apparent suicide. It's on MichaelSavage.com from Fox News. It's a heck of a story. Tragedy, yes. So here's a high-class French guy, age 65, who lost as much as $1.4 billion. They find him this morning sitting at his desk with both wrists slashed. They find a box cutter and a bottle of sleeping pills on his desk. No suicide note was found. Villachouet could not cope with the pressure following the outbreak of the scandal. The Tribune's website said, quoting his relatives, "This is a farewell from someone who had done nothing wrong." I agree. He did nothing wrong, but the SOB who... Let me stop right here. I can't say it what I'd like to say. De La Villachouet's fund enlisted links to Europe's highest society, including Prince Michel of former Yugoslavia and Philippe Junot, a French businessman who was a former husband of Princess Caroline of Monaco. He lived in an affluent suburb of Westchester County with his wife. They have no children. There's no answer at the family's house. So here's a guy who did the right thing, but he couldn't live with the shame. Came from a long line of aristocratic Frenchmen. With the Magone part of his name referring to one of France's most powerful families. A lot of good it does you. Well, he did what he felt had to do, I guess, as an aristocrat, which is kill himself. I wouldn't do it that way. If I lost everything, what should I do? Kill myself? I was down. I've been down. I've been up. I've been up and down. I've been a predator. I've been a pawn. You remember that song by Sinatra? You got that one? I've been a puppet, a poet, a prophet, a poet, a prawn, and a king. I know it's a pawn and a king. But you have to have been a pawn to understand what it is to be a prince. I've been everything. I mean, I've had to do a lot of things to survive. That's why I can identify.
I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet. A pawn and a king.
In my case, it's a prawn and a king. I've been a prawn, not a king. What would you do if you lost everything? How would you start over? What if you woke up and you're ripped off by this SOB made off of someone like him and you had nothing? Let's say the day before you, and then next day you don't know what to do with yourself. You know, there was a guy here in Marin County. I won't mention his name. I'm talking a long time ago. He was a mortgage broker, and he swindled whatever. He got caught, lost everything. He went to San Quentin. I had him on the show when I was a local talk show host. I won't mention his name. The guy is a real prince in that he is a white guy, loses everything, goes to San Quentin, and he survives. And he called my show. And if he's listening, he's entitled to you call again, please. I said to him, how did you survive San Quentin? Middle-aged white guy who was once a rich man. He said, well, Michael, he says, what you do is you barter what tools you have. I said, well, what tools did you have? He said, I had knowledge. I was literate. And I became... the guy who could go to the law books for the baddest guys in the prison. They protected me. It's amazing. And he did. He was unscathed so far as I know. He came out, did his time, came out and opened a little store. Guess what? To me, he's a gentleman. He's a prince. To have lost everything, go to San Quentin, come out and have the guts to open a little store and thrive in a little store and come back into the community, to me, the man is a star. That's what you have to do. What could you do? What could you do if you lose everything? I mean, I don't know. I do what I have to do. That's all. You're going to die. You're not going to kill myself over money. What are the reasons to kill yourself? Answer, none. None. It's the biggest infamata you could commit if you're an Italian. If you're a Jew, you can't do it. If you're a Muslim, you can't do it. Anyone else, you can do it. Go ahead. Go with my blessing. Because the Bible says that it's the gravest sin you could commit. It's committing homicide against yourself, and it's not your property. You are God's property. That's the brilliance of the religion. So it prevents suicide in religious people, as it should. That's why the atheists are into euthanasia and suicide and all of the other horrible, horrible things that human beings can do on the earth. Because they don't believe in God. They don't believe in themselves. In order to believe in yourself, you have to believe in God. If you can't believe in God, you can't believe in yourself. You're lying to yourself. That's why you became a drug addict and a degenerate and went to work in Hollywood with the other atheists. Don't you get it?
Savage.
The story I'm going to tell you occurred when I was a young man. First a kid and then a young man. And it was about a man who grew up as one of my father's best friends in a very poor neighborhood in New York City. They were immigrants together. Their parents came over. They came over, I think, maybe on the same boat, or they met each other in the slums of New York. And they both had a very tough life, and they worked their way up little by little, as the immigrants have to do and as they struggle in the society. And this man went into a business that took off at a certain point. Like a rocket. He hit a fad in a certain business, and he started to make a great deal of money, and he moved way beyond our family. While we lived in an attached house in Queens, New York, an attached brick house, he had the money to move his family to a detached house. Remember how important that distinction was in those days. It's like the Buick LeSabre as opposed to the Buick Roadmaster. Well, God forbid you, a Rockefeller, you bought a Cadillac, if you can imagine. That's how people used to grade themselves in those days by their success, you know, their status, cars and houses. I don't suppose it's much different today. It just isn't as easy to figure out in some regard, not on the road anyway. Anyway, so he moved to this detached house in Roslyn, New York. And it was a beautiful house. It had its own garden all around it. We only had a little strip of grass in the backyard, a little teeny one in the front. And the carpet was wall to wall, and it was pink, and he was a big cigar smoker, and we go over and visit, and I had a very good time. He would gloat, you know, with the cigar and lord it over my father, and we'd leave. My father never said anything against him, but, you know, I could see in his eyes that he was in his, you know, he was a little, let's say lost that little battle at that time. You know how men are. I mean, men are competitive. Even if they love their friend, if their friend does better than them, there's a degree of envy in every human being. It's just one of the cardinal sins. As years went on, the man's business continued to thrive. And then I left home. I moved away from New York City. I went and did my thing, collecting plants, working for my graduate degrees, thousands of miles away. I was living 6,000 miles away, then 9,000 miles away in the Fiji Islands. And lo and behold, on one of my trips back to New York when I was already a father myself, I had heard that this man's business had collapsed entirely. The fad that he had rode like a wave had died. Women were no longer buying that particular product. And the man who had a chain of successful wholesale stores lost everything. He lost everything, and it was so fast that he wound up living where he started, on the Lower East Side of New York, in a poor relative's apartment with his wife and the relative's family, back where he started in a one-room apartment. And that's where I come in. I come back from one of my trips to the Fiji Islands. I'm a young man in my, I don't know how old I must have been. I don't remember, 25, 30. I don't remember what age I was already anymore. And there he was sitting in my father's house. And I love this man. I loved him like another father. I loved all my father's friends. And you know how it is when you're a kid in a very close-knit community. You tend to love the people like they're your own. You know, we all grew up so closely together. There was never a bad word between him and my father. Man, he's sitting there shrunken up in the chair in my living room where he had lost everything. And he looks up at me, still smoking a cigar, and he was shrunken in the chair. And he looks up at me in his eyes and he says, Michael, look what happened to me. Look what happened to me. And his eyes were like wandering left and right. He didn't understand what happened to him. And he said, I'd rather I have cancer than what God did to me. And lo and behold, I soon left New York. I went back to do what I did, which is collecting plants. And I heard that 2 years later he died from one of the most rapidly invasive forms of brain cancer. Be careful what you say. God hears the truth, but waits. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. Listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I woke up last night at about 4 a.m. I couldn't sleep. I heard a rumbling in the sky, and I know what that low rumbling in the sky means. I know that the gigantic bombers are on the move. They're coming out of the Air Force Base near Sacramento. I didn't have to read about it in the paper today. I just know they're moving them. I don't know where they're moving them. I don't know how many were being moved, but I heard the low rumble in the sky at 4 a.m., and I said, thank God something's going on behind the scenes because this is getting out of control. You've got a psychopath threatening New York and Washington, D.C. You've got an invisible president. You've got a quavering Secretary of Defense. You've got a Secretary of State that went over to the Palestinian side, meaning the PLO side. It's astonishing to me what a group of hollow men we have running this country. And then I couldn't sleep. I couldn't get back to sleep after I heard that low rumble because things are very terrifying right now if you really listen carefully. You don't have to put your ear to the ground to know what's going on in this world. All you got to do is take your blinders off and stop watching baseball and get your eyes off YouTube and get your eyes off pornography and get your eyes off, you know, the latest lingerie on YouTube. Stop listening to Moloch's madnesses and start looking at what's going on in your world. And I sat down and I wrote this. Take it for what it is. I wrote this down. I said, I met with my kitchen cabinet last night while cooking a light dinner. As I drank the Bordeaux, I consulted with my chief advisor, Teddy, a 10-pound gray poodle. In my kitchen cabinet with us were Plato, Moses, Jesus, John Locke, George Washington, Lincoln, Patton, and God. Here's what my kitchen cabinet recommended for rescuing America. I wrote out a 4-page plan. You think I'm just a funny guy, huh? Let's start with my plan for rescuing America. Page 1, domestic, A. Cut federal income taxes by 2% per year over 4 years for a minimum total of 8% over 4 years. B, reduce federal government departments in size by 4% each year for a total reduction of size by 16% over 4 years. C, eliminate all public assistance for able-bodied recipients. Cut off all public assistance for immigrants for 5 years. Repatriate those who are not working after 2 years. D, immediately impose tariffs on cars and trucks owned by foreign entities, even if they're manufactured in America. E, cause illegal aliens to build a wall between the United States and Mexico, and then repatriate them. Pay them a one-time worker fee. F, increase pay for active duty combat troops by 10%. Number 2, fire any unmarried military person becoming pregnant while on active duty. Shall I continue? I will, whether you want me to or not. Here's the rest of my domestic policy for saving or rescuing America. G, make abortions illegal except when the physical survival of the mother is threatened, to be determined by 3 medical doctors. Number 2 in that category, require a NORPLAN for all women on welfare of childbearing age. H, close all houses of sex and massage. I, expand the DEA while decriminalizing most drugs. J, regarding the media. 1, eliminate all foreign ownership of any American media entity. 2, break up overly large conglomerates like News Corporation. K, encourage childbearing among tax-paying citizens. Create a marriage incentive through lower taxes for married heterosexual couples and a government subsidy for each child conceived and carried to birth. Increase the subsidies for each year the couple remains married. L, repatriate all illegal immigrants now incarcerated. Encourage all other illegals to self-repatriate through double taxation on wages and fines on employers. This is Michael Savage. I'll go on with my international program for rescuing America. I'm sure that most of you would turn the program off. You'd rather listen to the hollow men in the media. Go ahead and listen. I don't care anymore. We've got a hollow, empty suit running the country. We've got a hollow, empty skirt wanting to run the country. And the only people who can save this country have been silenced by the media bosses. So I'll go on with my international plan for rescuing this great nation. International, A, Iraq. It'll be Iraq, Iran, North Korea, Israel, China, the United Nations. Here it comes, A, Iraq. 1, cordon off the Sunni triangle. Give the people 72 hours to leave. 2, divide Iraq into 3 to 4 sectors, Sunni, Shiite, Kurd, and international. Next, remove all U.S. troops after above achieved. B, Iran. 1, sanctions, embargoes, and mine their harbors. Nothing goes in, nothing comes out. C, North Korea. Destroy their launching platforms. Impose a naval blockade on all goods coming in or out except food. D, Israel, Arab entities. Give Israel 4 years to become self-sufficient. Cut off all foreign aid to all nations. E, China, 20% tariffs on all China-made goods immediately, rising by 5% each year for each year China refuses to revalue the currency. F, United Nations, withdraw immediately, remove all diplomats and staff, convert the United Nations building into housing for the working poor. G, Mexico, force Mexico to pay 1 barrel of oil for every illegal alien in the United States of America per month. I'm Michael Savage. I approve of this message. I went out on my boat with a group of friends, 3 couples and 2 dogs, to watch the arrival on our bay, San Francisco Bay, of the warships. It's called the Parade of Ships. Your captain, Michael Savage, timed it just perfectly. I allowed exactly 31 minutes from departure time from my dock to the bridge. And just as we hit the bridge, we heard on the channel where they were. They were a mile out, and there they were. And there they came, and there they came in such noble glory, led, of course, by the aircraft carrier. It was so astonishing to be on a small craft and watch seven ships from our fleet come in under the Golden Gate Bridge with all of the young kids, the naval guys, and the girls up on the deck in their colors, standing there at attention. It was so beautiful. But here comes the best part. The best part is yet to come. I had been on an aircraft carrier, as you know, last spring, courtesy of the U.S. Navy, the Stennis. And I watched the F-A-18 Hornets take off and land. And I was just knocked out by the genius of our young men who fly those ships, the young men that our vermin in the media will never show you. The young men that our vermin in the media hide. Instead, they show you the junkies and the perverts on a daily basis. The junkies, the perverts, the quislings, the sex change artists, the sex maniacs, glorified by the vermin who run the media. But never do you see the young men who fly those F-A-18s. Well, anyway, we're on the boat, bobbing around out there, holding our place, being shepherded back off to a safe distance by the Coast Guard, doing a great job. They were like the German shepherds of the water. I mean, they were zipping back and forth, making sure we kept our distance, as they should. But we were still close enough, maybe 1,000 yards. I don't know how close we were. But there was something odd about the aircraft carrier as she was steaming in. That was that the jets, a couple of the jets, had their engines on. And I said, what the heck are the jets lit for? Why are these jets lit as she's entering San Francisco Bay? Well, we learned soon enough why. Because out of the blue, kaboom, one of the jets launched off the deck right in the middle of San Francisco Bay. I started to jump like a kid who had seen a train crushing a penny on a railroad track, but one wasn't enough. Here came number two. Boom, went the next jet right in the middle of San Francisco Bay. I had never seen F-A-18 Hornets launched from a carrier deck in the middle of a municipal harbor until that day, and I got to tell you something, I was very impressed. But having said that, I wish we'd use some of these planes. Having said that, I wish we'd use one of these aircraft carriers. Having said that, I wish we'd use the genius and the daring of our sailors and launch these ships, get them out into the South China Sea, launch some of the planes, launch missiles, do whatever you have to do, Mr. Bush. Take down the pot-bellied pigs' launch towers. You can do it with conventional weapons. You don't need anyone's permission. I don't care about the rotten sneakers and the cheap basketballs. I don't care about the knives and I don't care about the shoes. I don't care about the raincoats and I don't care about the cheap dog food. I don't care about the cheap kidneys and I don't care about the cheap currency. Mr. Bush, show yourself to be a leader, Mr. Bush. Knock out the pot-bellied pigs' launching towers now. Show him that there is a meaning to the word superpower. Show him that the meaning of the flag, don't tread on me, has meaning. Show him that America still has balls, Mr. Bush. Stop acting like a weakling, Mr. Bush. The people are screaming, Mr. Bush, for leadership, Mr. Bush. It's not enough to talk, Mr. Bush. You need to act, Mr. Bush. Get Rice out of there. Put a man in there. Launch the ships, Mr. Bush. Take down the pot-bellied pigs' towers, Mr. Bush, is what America is screaming for. And don't make any mistake about it. America is screaming for a military strike against North Korea. I don't mean nuclear. Let's be very clear about this. We are not talking about a nuclear strike. It's unnecessary. We are talking about conventional weaponry taking down his launch sites. Don't say to me you don't know where they are. He launched missiles into the Pacific 3 months ago. The very next day I said we should have taken down the missile launch sites. What happened? Nothing. Secretary of Nothing was sent out there, the school mom. She did nothing. She is incompetent. She is supine. She is laughable. She is only important to herself and her staff. And I say that unless America starts to show itself to be a world leader again, we're going to lose this leadership position that was built over centuries with the blood of our ancestors. Built over centuries with the blood of our ancestors, inherited by a group of people that I have to tell you I have no respect for. I don't know how to put it to you any other way. Every day I wake up and the news gets worse. Every day I see more statements and no activity and no action. Every day I fear for the future of this country. Every day I see them saying one thing and doing another. Every day I see another government official leaving office and going to work for the enemy. Every day I see the very same government officials on these television shows telling us why it's good to screw America. Every day I pray for the arrival on the scene of a man on white horseback. Every day I pray for a man who loves America more than he loves his party. Every day I pray for God to bless America. Savage. We'll be right back. Why is it that this last generation has become a generation of sluts and empty men who are incapable of raising a family, who are much like girlfriends with a male appendage attached to their body? Have the girls descended so far down the scale of social evolution that they think God put them on the planet simply to have an orgasm and to get drunk and puke on themselves in a nightclub at 3 o'clock in the morning? Who is responsible for this this disgusting imagery that we are paraded, that is paraded before us on a daily basis? These celebrity sluts like Paris Hilton, who we all detest. Anyone who does not detest her is a psychotic. How could you not detest these people? It's impossible not to detest what they stand for. They stand for the vapidity of our times. They stand for the death of the West. They stand for the decadence that most sane people do not want to engage in. If you check out the connections between this and the media, you'll find out that there's a reason that Western women do not want to have children and that Western boys have become much like girls with a male appendage, sort of like a pocketbook with short hair for the girls to drag around and show off for a while until they dismiss them and get another human satisfier toy called a man. The men will not have children. They don't even understand that it is the mark of a man to get married and have children. The women don't want to have children because it might spoil their bods. And after all, isn't it all about their bods and their abs and their butt and their lats? Isn't that what the girls want, are good butts and good abs and good lats? Now, why is it that girls are behaving sort of like homosexuals in their mentality? And why is it that our boys are leading a sort of homosexualized lifestyle in their own way? How is it that the entire West, in essence, is engaging in a dance of death, which in many ways mimics the gay lifestyle? How did that happen? I'll let you put two and two together. But I have to take my hat off to the Pope. The Pope is the intellectual, the religious intellectual leader of the West. There are no Jewish leaders, I am sorry to tell you, speaking out as clearly and as succinctly as the Pope does on so many issues. The Pope said last week that homosexuals are destroying themselves. And I want to read you what the Pope said. And if you have a problem with what I'm reading to you, why don't you send it to the Vatican, not to me? Pope Benedict XVI said homosexuals end up destroying themselves, so the church has a duty to speak out on moral issues that affect the very spiritual and physical lives of man. Now, most Americans know this, which is why any time they're allowed to vote against homosexual marriage, which they know to be an abomination and a death service, not a life-giving service, they say no to the death service called homosexual marriage. Now, he didn't write that, I did. But I'll read you what the Pope said. I'm quoting now. Quote, "In seeking to emancipate himself from his body, man ends up by destroying himself," close quote. The Pope told cardinals, archbishops, bishops, and members of the Roman Curia last week in a meeting overlooked by most of the world's press. The Pope also lamented low birth rates in Europe, saying couples no longer seem to want children. "This fact," said the Pope, "has penetrated my soul." He continued. He said men and women today are unsure about the future. "This fact, alongside the desire to have all of life to themselves, is perhaps the most profound reason for which the risk of having children appears to many as almost unbearable. If we do not relearn the basic foundations of life, if we do not rediscover the certainty of faith, it will also be ever more difficult for us to give others the gift of life and the challenges of an unknown future." The Pope also referred to the controversy over homosexual marriage. He said, quote, "At this point, I cannot fail to mention my concern over de facto couples. When new legislation is created that relativizes marriage, the rejection of the definitive bond gains judicial endorsement. Relativizing the difference between the sexes tacitly confirms those bleak theories which seek to remove all relevance from a human being's masculinity or femininity as if this were a purely biological matter." God bless Pope Benedict XVI for speaking out on the seminal issue of our time, which is the homosexual dance of death and the homosexualization of the West. There is a direct correlation between the homosexualization of the media, the homosexual mafia that controls virtually everything that you read, everything that you see, everything that you hear, everything that you wear, And the behavior of our boys and girls and the fact that they will not have children and they simply want to party until 3 a.m. and spend the money on designer items so they look good and they have good abs and good butts and good lats and good delts.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
San Diego, Vinny, welcome to The Savage Nation.
He's one of the originators of the Mambo Society in New York. A lot of the dances you went to were organized by me at the Palladium.
Really? Amazing. Well, I want to thank you for giving me an awful lot of good nights.
Oh, we had a ball there. Sorry, I'd never met you at that time, but we had seven clubs going all at once. So a lot
Vinny,
of
let me ask you something. Why is there not such a scene in San Francisco where there's such a large Latin community?
They've turned liberal. They're not with their music anymore. They're not with their backgrounds anymore. It's mostly.
Well, wait a minute. Isn't there a thriving Latin scene, nightclub scene in L.A.?
Yeah, but it's not so much of the Afro-Cuban. They don't play too much of that anymore. It's more modern.
Well, so where is the Afro-Cuban played, if at all, or is it a dead dog?
It's either in New York or mostly in Miami now.
Oh.
Miami's the big place for the Latin American stuff. The Afro-Cuban, all that kind of music is all...
So let's say I'm going to Miami next week, and I'm probably going to go. Where would I go to hear Afro-Cuban music in Miami?
Oh, Jesus, the names of the clubs, I don't know the names right off the top of my head. There's tons
of them. So what are you doing in San Diego? Laying low? You retired?
Yeah, no, I'm 69 now. I'm a mortgage banker.
Oh, I want to hear that story. You didn't get touched by the Madoff, did you?
No, not at all. Not at all. A lot of people saw that coming. I saw that coming. The guy.
Let me ask you, Vinny, what do you think is the chance of a maid guy visiting Madoff?
Big time.
Oh, how's that? How's that for a quest for Santa? Nobody asked that question yet. Oh, ho, ho, and what do you want? Well, how about a maid guy visiting Madoff?
Oh, my God. You know, I'm Sicilian, and my whole family's from the other side.
Right.
And I got into Latin music years ago, and the fellas are all into that, too, you know. There's a lot
they
of
are?
Money in that. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of money in that. Here's the reason. The white crowd, when they would go out to the nightclubs, they'd wreck the place, throw furniture around, break windows. You know, there was always a fight at the end of the night chasing some broad.
Yeah.
And Latin music, those people would come out, they'd get dressed in suits, they'd drink like anybody else, but to them it was a night out, they enjoyed it, they didn't wreck anything.
Yes. It was a family affair. I remember, you know, Vinny, it's funny you should mention that. It's one of the things I liked about the upscale Latin clubs. I remember once I was on a ship I was working on many years ago, it stopped in Panama, and I had never been to Panama, and I stumbled upon Panamanian music, which was very close to the Cuban. It was still Afro-Cuban, but it was Afro-Panamanian. And they were playing in an outdoor amphitheater with the sea splashing up against the seawall, breaking over the... And it was old people and infants and young people dancing the night away. And it was very, very well. The people controlled themselves very well. That was a total difference from the American nightclub scene like you just mentioned.
Totally different. You're right. Totally different. As a matter of fact, there used to be a place in New York called the Taft Hotel. And on a Friday night, it was the American crowd that would go there, and they would wreck the place. And come Saturday night, was the Latin crowd that would go there. I'm sorry, the Latin crowd. And nothing would get broken, not even a glass.
And they were mainly Puerto Rican, correct?
Yes, mostly Puerto
yes.
Rican, and they were just wonderful people. I had a ball with them, and that's
isn't that amazing? See, this is an unknown side story to the music I've been playing tonight that I'm glad you elucidated, because I didn't know truly the differential in terms of how the crowds behave. But here I have Vinny, a man of Sicilian descent, who happened to... You ran all those clubs? You ran the Palladium? And which other ones, Vinny?
Riviera Terrace, the El Seclusion on 77 and Broadway, the Colgate Gardens in the Bronx. These were 3,000-seaters, the Colgate Gardens.
Well, what about out in Queens? Were there any such clubs out in Queens?
No, the clubs in Queens that had the Latin music had a bad crowd, guys you wouldn't want to hang out with.
Yeah, mainly from Jackson Heights.
You got it.
The necktie crowd. Hey, Vinny, how come we can communicate so well? We don't even know each other.
We come from the same place, guy. It's in our genes, you and me.
Isn't that something? So in I want to ask a few more questions, Vinny. I'm enjoying this a lot, and I'm having a lot of fun. I often wonder how a guy like you, who lived through that whole scene in New York, you're in a sedate mortgage business in San Diego, you know, it's still in your blood. You're still in your blood. You're not bored to death.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, New Year's, I'm going out to a Latin New Year's party here. They got a big dance in San Diego, and they're bringing in Afro-Cuban bands to play. And I've never given it up. I've loved it all my life.
Are you married?
Yes, I am. No children, though.
But I'm saying, I only ask that not because I'm looking to date you. I'm saying you're going with your wife?
Yes, I am with the wife.
You got a good sense of humor. Anyway, you got a good sense of humor. But let's say, like, even the Italian food in San Diego, you can't tell me that you find food that you like, can you?
No, not here.
No. Now, that's a truism. Am I right about that? It's almost impossible.
You're right. You can't get anything here. Maybe in Vegas you can catch a couple of restaurants, but that's about it.
Okay, now we're going to go down the list. Give me a Vegas restaurant that you like, that you approve of.
Ooh, jeez. Oh,
now,
wow.
Let's let that go. I know two of them that are really very good. One is way out on a highway towards the way past the airport. It's in the middle of nowhere. It looks like a junk bar. But the giveaway is, it says, we root for the Cleveland Indians. I said, okay, let's stop here. I went in there. Actually, a guy took me in there. He said to me, Sinatra used to come in here for the pizza, and so did Dean Martin. I mean, it looks like a dump, but the food is really basic and really very good. So do you ever come up to San Francisco and try the food up here?
No, I've been up there twice. I didn't have to go up for business. I didn't try any of the food in Frisco. I don't know what's up there.
Okay. Now, there are a couple of good places. And by the way, the best Italian restaurants in the city, I think, are related in many ways to Sicilian cuisine. I happen to love Sicilian food because it's spicier than Northern Italian. I know a lot of people say they like the Northern Italian because it's less spicy. I happen to like the arrabbiata, you know, side of the scale.
Yes.
I'm going to send you a belated Christmas present. It won't arrive in time, Vinny, but I'd love you to have a copy of my autobiography, Psychological Nudity. It's certainly been a pleasure speaking with you this evening.
Thank you. You know, I've been listening to you over 10 years.
And what?
Over 10 years I've been listening to you. I love your show.
And well, because we speak in the same vernacular, even though we're from different groups and walks of life. I mean, there's a certain commonality in the way I present or the way I see the world and what I say and the way you do.
Yeah, and you see it straight. I mean, you tell it like it is. You know, if anybody can't see that, they got to be blind.
Mm-hmm. Well, you must have a lot of dysfunction in San Diego with the politics down there.
God, they're crazy down here.
They are crazy. They're insane. They took a beautiful Navy town and turned it into a psychological madhouse.
They did. I don't know. You know, half of these people ought to be in prison for what they did to the regular people out in the street. They hurt them.
Well, one of the former mayors of San Diego is now a bigwig in the Congress. She's on the Intelligence Committee. I can't imagine how we can defend ourselves with women like that on an Intelligence Committee. Can you imagine?
I don't know where they find these people. She's ruined everything. Listen, you know.
Yeah, you know what? Let's have a good night. Stay on the line. Give my guys your address. Okay, we're going to send you a Psychological Nudity, Vinny. God bless you. Thanks for calling the show.
Savage.
Knoxville, Tennessee. Steve, you're on the Savage Nation.
I listen to your show all the time, and I hear you talk a lot about the media and how it's become so biased and they only play the stories that benefit them. Yet when I listen to your show, I hear most of your callers are just singing your praises, and they don't really give you anything to debate about.
Yeah, why don't you give me something to debate about?
I'm sorry?
Why don't you give me something to debate about?
Well, I mean, I'm very liberal, so most of your views...
Also, give me something we can debate. Go ahead. You called. You want to debate. Let's debate.
Okay. First thing that I've been listening to that you've been saying is how you feel that the third world cultures shouldn't be brought into America, that we've brought ourselves to higher standards than that. And
so you think third world standards should be introduced to America and we should, what, give up internal plumbing?
No, is that you do, however, seem to think that we should start torturing.
Now you're changing. You want to talk about interrogating people who would cut your throat, or you want to talk about eliminating the flush toilet? Which one do you want to talk about?
No. What I'm saying is those are the cultures and those are the standards that they hold themselves to. So why would we hold ourselves to the standards of...
Well, you see what you're doing? This is classic liberalism, where you use twisted logic and come up with a faulty conclusion. You are in a war, just as I am in a war, with Islamic fascists who would like to kill you and or convert you. Do you accept that or not?
I accept that there are extremists in the Muslim community that would like...
All right. All right, they would like that. And they have no rules with regard to how they treat us. Is that correct? They're much tougher and battle-hardened and more fanatic than anyone you could ever imagine. They feel virtual no pain. They're like supermen. Now, how would you get information from them? What techniques would you use?
Well, I'm not saying that I've got the answers to that, but I think that...
Well, you do. You have the answer, which is don't use any astringent techniques. You have an answer. You don't have it. This is such a typical Democrat call. You have no answer, but you know that what the Republicans want to do or the conservatives want to do is wrong. That's classic Pelosi logic.
And this is why you don't take Democratic calls. And
I just took one. I just took a Democrat call, and you didn't come up with a conclusion, a solution, a proposal, nothing. All you said was your idea of torturing the bad guys is wrong. So I asked you, how would you extract information? You said, I don't know.
Okay. The other point.
Now, let's deal with the next problem. Let's deal with immigration. You like illegal immigrants in America?
Not illegal, no, but I don't think we should close the borders by any means.
And so how would you stop the tide, the millions and millions and millions of illegal aliens coming in from Mexico? How would you stop it?
Well, how do you figure that closing the borders is going to help our country?
Well, you're changing the discussion. We both agreed that we are wanting to stop the flood of illegal aliens into America. Didn't we agree on that?
Yes, illegal, but I don't want to close the borders down. Yes, that's where you go to that extreme. You say don't let anyone...
How would you stop the illegals from coming into America? How would you do it?
How would you...
Well, no, you're not answering me. You just said you want to stop the illegal aliens. I'm asking you how you would do it. How would you do it?
Okay, obviously every system is flawed, and there are other ways than just closing down the...
Give me one other way to stop the flood of illegals who have no fear of our laws, because the laws are so weak and so watered down. They also know that they'd rather put that in the American judicial system and the American Justice Department and the Democrats and the Republicans would rather put our Border Patrol agents behind bars than illegal aliens or drug dealers. So how would you stop them?
Okay. The problem with this whole conversation is you're going to such an extreme by closing the entire border and not thinking of any other solutions yourself.
What do you mean by closing the entire border? I didn't say close the entire border. I said make the border impassable by illegal aliens. I didn't say build a concrete wall that no one could go across.
You have said many times that you want the borders closed and don't let anyone in.
No, I never said that. Now you're making things up. In fact, if you read my last book, I had a much more intelligent plan than either of these points that you're raising. I suggested oil for illegals. Did you ever hear that idea?
No.
You didn't want to hear, because you made up your mind that you're the intelligent, progressive liberal, and I'm the oaf who can't think. That all conservatives are unthinking oafs. Well, I came up with an idea called oil for illegals. Make Mexico pay one barrel per oil per month for every illegal alien in America, which are estimated to be between 20 and 30 million illegals here, and make them pay 20 to 30 million barrels of oil a month to pay for the social services that these people are not entitled to, that they're gaining. What's wrong with that idea?
If it could work, then I would be all for it.
Well, now ask yourself why, if I wrote that idea in a best-selling book, not one of the lying schmucks on Fox News or anywhere else would have me on to discuss that idea. Can you answer that question?
I totally agree that the media is absolutely biased.
We know CNN is biased, but do you know that Fox News is also biased? Are you aware of that?
Yes, very much so.
All right. Why would they not take a conservative idea like that of oil for illegals? Because their bosses have said, we don't want to upset the Republican Party. And the Republicans don't want to demand anything from the Mexican government. Therefore, don't have that savage on the show. See, Steve, if you actually listen to me carefully, you'll find out that I am really an independent, as opposed to those who say they're independent, to let you think that they really are independent when they're really not independent. The fact of the matter is, I also have solutions. They're savage solutions that I offer. They're not just screaming and yelling and no ideas. The Democrats, unfortunately, feel that torture is bad, but they don't come up with a way to extract information from the enemy. They feel that illegal aliens are actually good for America. That's why they won't even pass a Voter ID Act. They're saying that anyone who wants to pass a Voter ID Act is bringing back slavery. Now, what person in their right mind would want an illegal alien to vote in America? I wouldn't. I hope that you wouldn't either.
Not at all. And listen,
You know what I'm hearing from you, Steve? I'm actually hearing that you're not as liberal as you think. You're more open-minded than you think, and you're open to ideas. And I want to thank you for listening to the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Many Democrats had more positive things to say about your comprehensive proposal than many Republicans did. Do you think a Democratic Congress gives you a better shot at comprehensive immigration reform?
You know, I should have brought this up. I do. I think we have a good chance. And thank you. It's an important issue, and I hope we can get something done on it. I meant to put that in my list of things that we need to get done. I would hope Republicans have recognized that we've taken very strong security measures to address one aspect of comprehensive immigration reform.
Worker provision.
Well, that's got to be an integral part of a comprehensive plan. When you're talking comprehensive immigration reform, one part of it is a guest worker program where people can come on a temporary basis to do jobs right. Americans are not doing.
Amnesty is in the air. That's why his dad and Clinton are such pals. It's all worked out. The egos on these guys, I just can't imagine being them. I can't understand what they think of themselves off camera, like at home alone in a toilet. How do they live with themselves? They're so important. They're such important people. Like when they sit down in the toilet, I mean, do they say, I'm an important person and I'm on the toilet now? How do they deal with that? When they sit down with a fork in front of a television set to eat, what do they say, I'm an important person with a fork in front of a television set and I'm eating mashed potatoes? When do they not be important persons? When do they start being people? I don't know. I think there's a certain degree of we know that there has to be a certain degree of madness to be a politician. You have to, you know, who would want to do this? Why do you want people to adulate you and know everything about everything you do every second of the day? Who would want that? I'm a recluse. Radio is perfect for me. I never liked employees. I don't like telling anyone what to do. I'd rather do it myself. I'd rather take the garbage out myself. You know why? Because I know how to put the garbage in the can better than a maid. If she put the garbage in a can, I'd go down there. She would do it wrong. I don't like the way she put it in the garbage can. She'd probably turn the bag upside down and throw the loose garbage into the can. Me, I tie the bag up and put it in the can so it doesn't rot. I'm giving an example. Most things I'd rather do myself. I'd rather do my own laundry. Why? I know how much soap to use so I don't itch. Also, if they throw a towel in too high a heat, you know how many years it took me? You know how many decades it took me to figure out why certain towels turn into like straw? You spend $100 on a towel, wash it wrong once, it's straw. You may as well be in a Ukrainian boys club in 1940. The towel is like sandpaper with one wrong drying. You got to read the label on like Egyptian cotton. It's crazy what you have to do to wash a towel right. Cold water, warm water, light water, spin dry, low. You can't give it to a maid. Everything to a maid is like industrial, like from Guatemala. They figure that everybody's like a manual laborer working in Greece. And so they wash your clothing with so much detergent, and they dry it hot. I mean, it burns the towel. That's the way you do overalls from a guy who was underneath a car all day, let's say working in a chicken processing plant. So what I'm saying, I'd rather do my own towels and my own underwear. Otherwise, I, like, ruin my skin. And that's why I'd rather analyze things for myself instead of turning to, like, Dick Morris. I'm going to listen to Dick Morris tell me what I'm supposed to think, or a guy on television. That's why you love me. You know why you love me. It's because I'm like you. That's the truth. You know what I did last night? I swear. Should I admit this? What do I care? I watched Sopranos reruns on Comcast. I love that show in a rerun. Like, I know, like, what's going to happen. The only ones I don't like watching when they kill a gay guy. I hate that. I don't like gratuitous violence. Many of you have me all upside down anyway. You got me all wrong, but that's okay. I don't really care.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
You know, when you talk about the enemy within, one could draw a very good comparison to the HIV virus, where a foreign virus invades a body and literally takes over a defense cell and duplicates itself inside the defense cell, and so then kills the body by destroying its ability to defend itself. It's almost identical to the Madeleine Albrights, who are now running around acting like they're our friends when in fact they're working for the enemy. So let's go to health for a minute. Of course, I talk every day about the health of a nation, but let's talk about the health of a body. Here's what Mark Twain said in Letters from the Earth. Disease, that is the main force, the diligent force, the devastating force. It attacks the infant the moment it is born. It furnishes it one malady after another, croup, measles, mumps, bowel troubles, teething pains, scarlet fever, and other childhood specialties. It chases the child into youth and furnishes it some specialties for that time of life. It chases the youth into maturity, maturity into age, and age into the grave. Mark Twain. And now I want to read you just one little entry that I wrote back in when it was published in 82 in Healing Children Naturally by yours truly on page 142 under Chocolate. Now just listen to this, because many of you are chocolaholics and you've been told that chocolate's good. It contains antioxidants and I can eat more chocolate, and I can even give it to Johnny in the morning. Let's give him some cocoa. That's what good old Doc Brown told me. Pay no attention to those quacks in the nutrition field. Give Johnny anything he wants to eat, because here's this little shiny pill called Ritalin. We call it medication, not a pill. And that medication will keep Johnny real, real stable. So here's what I wrote. Chocolate comes from the cacao tree, an evergreen of the Coca-Cola family. It does not contain caffeine, but it does contain another stimulant, theobromine, which has effects quite similar to those of caffeine. When used to make cocoa, the amount of theobromine present would be comparable to the caffeine in a cup of weak coffee or tea, approximately 30 milligrams. Of course, chocolate is also a saturated fat and high in calories, and when used in cocoa, it is usually sweetened with sugar. Now listen to the following few sentences, please. Copper is also abundant in chocolate and must be avoided by hyperactive children, who often have low zinc and high copper levels. For the same reasons, we in the Savage home never use cocoa or hot chocolate for our children. They may seem innocent enough, but in fact are great nutritional time bombs filled with sucrose, bleaches, copper, artificial flavorings, and excess calories. Stick to warm milk flavored with carob powder and sweetened with honey, which makes a fine bedtime drink. Now, I've given you a lot of information there. I'm sure that the oafs in the media will say, oh, but sure, you give that child cocoa. Never mind what anyone says. After all, I went to high school, and I know about golf. What are you? Oh, you give him meat, and you give him chocolate. You give him whatever medication that good old doctor has you give him, because those doctors have the interests of your child at heart. And they know, all of them know, what good medication is. Well, it's identical to the political situation. You going to believe in Dr. Baker? Dr. Baker has just given you a recipe for destroying the nation. That's what old Dr. James Baker has just prescribed. He may look like the doctor of yesteryear. You know, after all, he speaks like the old, good old American doctors. Tall, good-looking, speaks with a nice southern drawl. comes from a good law firm, great family. Well, he reminds me of the doctors that used to advertise Chesterfield cigarettes in the magazines of the 1930s. Exactly the same thing. They would have doctors say that I smoke Chesterfield for health because it's good for the T-zone. They were doctors, too. Well, now we have political doctors who are just like that doctor who used to sell Chesterfield. And the case before you is good old Dr. Baker. So if I've gone a little off topic, I've gone right back to topic, because that's how I do it. And that's the test of a good mind, is the ability to go far afield and come right back to the point that he's been trying to make all along. Now, I know if I keep up this health stuff, what's going to happen. I'll get a call. I'll say, Mike, I'm like that guy, that woman on the plane that had to bring matches on the plane the other day for flatulence. Mike, I asked, is there something I could take for so I don't have to take 10 books of matches on my next flight to Miami, Mike? What can I eat? What can I eat? Mike, while you're at on the thing for the matches, for the flatulence on the plane, can you give me something to make the down south part stand a little north? Point north like a compass needle, Mike. I don't want to like that Viagra stuff. It gives me a headache and I see blue. And while you're at it, Mike, I'm going to get the same thing. I don't want to do health. Please, no health cures. Maine, Susie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just have a really quick question for you. I have a 16-year-old son. He goes to the gym two or three times a week, but he is overweight. I decided to take him to a nutritionist, and I just want to know what your opinion of nutritionists are. Are they helpful? Can they make a difference?
Most of them are quacks, uneducated adults who know nothing. They have no credentials whatsoever, but they are selling you a bill of goods based on other people's work. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't an occasional nutritionist with real training and a real degree and really understand what they're talking about, but a lot of them are in it and don't really know what they're talking about. You have to look at their education. You have to look at their experience. You have to look at their certifications. Now, you may say, well, I'll go to an RD. They're even worse. The research dietitian degree is a complete reflection of the AMA principles of diet, which are totally toxic and know nothing about curing people through food. So I don't know what to recommend. Well, I do know what to recommend, actually. I would recommend that you go to a medical doctor who has a subspecialty in nutrition. That would be what I would recommend. There are some very good doctors around who have spent a lot of years studying nutrition, and that's where I would take my son. As far as weight loss, I mean, there's no mystery to it. You know, it takes self-control, and it takes controlling the diet. I don't know what you need to go to a doctor for that for. Do you?
No, actually, his medical doctor did recommend this nutritionist to him, so I think
well, so you're working with a medical doctor who probably hasn't, but the problem is, who is the nutritionist? A lot of them are self-taught. They read three articles in Cosmopolitan, and suddenly they're a nutritionist, so you got to look into that. Thanks for the call. I have a show that could be called How Not to Make Friends and Influence People, but you got to think about, how did people survive for eons without nutritionists? How did people survive for eons without going to these quacks and taking a Ritalin? How did your great-grandfather survive? How did they survive the Middle Ages eating shoe leather, and they were still able to read and write? How is that possible that Western civilization was built before Ritalin was discovered by the quack establishment called the pharmaceutical medical establishment? How is it possible? There must have been people who were hyperactive then. There must have been. How did they deal with it? Everybody knows people like that. They didn't need drugs. They walked a lot, they talked a lot, but they somehow got through life without having to take a drug to turn it into a zombie. 1-800-449-8255. It's the parents who are behind ADHD. They're lazy and they're feeding the child junk food. 90% of the ADHD cases can be cured if the parents were educated as to how they're poisoning their child, number one, and how they're being lazy and not feeding the child properly. Much of this information is well established. It's been lost because the pharmaceutical and medical establishments want you to lose it, just as the political establishment wants you to forget history in order to manipulate you. It's the same exact thing. It's called the establishment. They control everything. Now, if you look at the control of the media by the few madmen who control it all, you'll find out, unfortunately, they also control the educational establishment through boards that they sit on. They also control the pharmaceutical establishment through boards. They sit on multiple boards. So the same power-mad lunatic who runs the media that tells you things about food that are untrue and tells you things about politics that are patently false will also be peddling you drugs that are unnecessary and peddling you diets that are clearly harmful. That's called interlocking corporate directorships. Check it out. It was once well-established and well-understood that interlocking corporate directorships would ultimately lead to the demise of the American. They were 100% right, and we're living through it now. I'm getting the calls right now, and I'll do them. Actually, this is fun. Beverly in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I wanted to ask you a question. Number one, can we still get that book about healing children?
Is there... You know, it's an interesting question. I had a publisher a couple of years ago wanting to reprint the book, and I told him I'd have to revise it. I didn't have the time to revise it, but now that I found the copy, I have it in my hand here. I think I'm going to spend a little time on it and revise it and put it out for the people. I'm not going to make any money on it, but I think it's so good. It's such a like an encyclopedia of great information. It should not be lost. It has a diet for prospective parents. In other words, you know that a lot of couples don't even understand that they have to think about diet while they're attempting conception. Did you know that as well?
That lady probably gave her son a donut for breakfast. I could probably
a donut, probably, and a cup of cocoa.
Ask you something, Dr. Savage.
Do you know that cancer is a leading cause of children's death? Did you know that? Did you know that one of the most suppressed statistics of our time is that more children under the age of 15 die of cancer, including leukemia, than of any other cause aside from accidents? Do you know why we don't hear about children dying of cancer? Do you know why we don't see children who are bald in the back rooms of hospitals? Because the AIDS racketeers have knocked up the entire sympathy racket. You are only allowed to hear about AIDS and the suffering of AIDS and relationship to AIDS and only AIDS victims and AIDS this and AIDS that. And the children are left behind dying in the back rooms of the hospitals because they don't have a voice to speak for them. That's one of the reasons I wrote this book.
What can women do for PMS? I went to a doctor.
Oh, boy, did you open up a very, very tragic subject, because there are things you can do, but I'm not about to give you medical information on this show at this time. I really only wanted to bring up this book because the ADHD came up as a break from the political discussion. But there are many things you can do for PMS. And I think, truthfully, and this is not a bad idea, if you go to one of these mega health food operations around, you know, like Whole Foods kind of thing, is there one near you?
Yes, sir. And I take a lot of vitamins and I eat salmon.
No, but listen to me. If you go there, you know, you can get an education unto itself. Now, some of it's quackery and some of it's hucksterism. But some of what you're going to read in some of those brochures is worth thinking about. I'll tell you where I'd begin today, Beverly, with anything. The Internet has become the great unifier of knowledge. Some of it's junk, but some of it's excellent. I would simply do a search on the PMS and health, and I would read as much as I could, and I would sift and I would sort, and then I would try to consult with a medical doctor, an MD, who definitely has training in nutrition. Don't just go to any old Joe Blow MD who knows nothing about nutrition. They need to have studied nutrition. They need to specialize in it along with their medical degree. And you're going to get some wonderful advice right there. But I'm not going to give any advice today on this subject.
Savage.
I want to talk about North Beach, California. Unlike other shows, The Savage Nation is an ongoing serial. Each day relates to the day and the days that preceded the day that I am on the air. It's one long serial, you know, like The Lone Ranger Rides Again. Boys and girls, come back to this theater tomorrow for another serial. That's what I do, because it's my life and my view of the world. It's one man's opinion is all it is. Nobody writes my script. I live it, I eat it, I breathe it, I think it, I'm an American, this is what I'm going through. But at the same time that I'm interested in politics, I'm living a life. So I inject the real life 101 into the political view, and then you have to decide whether you like me and whether you want to listen to me and whether you agree with me or disagree with me, that's all. And that's why every day that I get up, I say, you know, you got to tell it like it is, man. Don't get weak. Don't falter. So I get off the air last night. And I go for a walk. I actually loved it. I had to put on a leather jacket, a scarf, and I walk through the streets. I walk past where that Muslim driver mowed down 17 people, right to the spot. And I started walking up California Street. It was like, you know, early evening. People were still rushing home, rushing out of the big, beautiful buildings. And I walk all the way up the hill, and I hit Grant Avenue. I was going to go all the way to the top, and I figured it's enough for the first day. And I turn right on Grant Avenue, which is Chinatown. Then I start looking at the stores, and I see old stores there. And you see these family businesses, 100 years, some of them. They haven't changed the sign because the grandfather was smart enough to own the building. He bought the dirt. He bought the bricks. And he passed it on to the next generation and the next. And the kids went to Berkeley or wherever. And they're successful. They didn't blow anyone up. They didn't say, I hate America. They did it the good old American way, which is the way my people did it. And I inherited nothing, by the way. And well, I can't say I inherited nothing. Financially, I inherited nothing. But I inherited more than money, which was a work ethic, number one. And the most important thing I inherited from my father was a desire, not an insistence on honesty. He got insanely angry if I bullcrapped him. If I said one thing that wasn't, that he thought I was giving him the BS, he would go nuts. He turned red-faced. To him, the truth was the most important thing. Now, I miss the mark every day. Don't think I'm an angel, because I'm not. I try my best, though. It's almost impossible in this world to be 100%. So anyway, I walk through the Chinatown. I'm looking at the storefronts, and I'm looking at the businesses and the knickknacks. And I stop in front of a Chinese knickknack store. And strangely enough, there was a Chinese gentleman about my age. Didn't know. He had his hands behind his back, and he was leaning over looking at an outdoor display of little tiny indoor water fountains that were making all sorts of preposterous waterfalls. And this, I don't know, we just looked at them. We both knew we wouldn't buy them. And I felt it as though I was living in the 1100s in Shanghai somewhere, because I knew that sometime in the past, you know, 1,000 years ago, somebody looked at little water fountains in a store in Shanghai. And I walked on down Grant Avenue, coming across Broadway into the alleged Italian district, because it kind of, they blur right now, like a New York Canal Street used to be the dividing line into Mulberry Street, you know, across from Chinatown. Same kind of thing here. And it is largely still Italian. Now, here's the interesting part to me. I'm in one of my Moulin Rouge melancholic moods, which is basically who I am, because I think that life is melancholic. I don't think life is particularly ecstatic. And I'm not on drugs, let me tell you that right now. Legal or illegal, I don't use them. I'm in one of my moods. That's all, meaning I'm me. This is how mankind is. Man is basically that way. The construct of the positive thinking happy male is an anomaly. It's a fiction, by the way, created by Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. But that's my opinion. I don't think mankind is fundamentally a happy animal. I think man is kind of a, you know, brooding animal, if you want to know what I think man really is. I think the rest is an invention. Anyway, dogs are happy. Mankind isn't. At least my dogs are happy because they live the life of Riley. So in the all of a sudden, in the middle of the honk, honk, beep, beep, people coming, people going, and the smell of garlic coming out of the restaurant, I said, am I going crazy? It was like an auditory hallucination. I hear da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. What am I, crazy? Am I hearing not Moulin Rouge, I'm hearing La Vie en Rose. And I said, what the heck? How could this be? How can I hear La Vie en Rose in the middle of all of this? Because the last I heard it was like, my sister's playing the piano a long time ago, and my father, may he rest in peace, was singing by the piano. I never heard it since, La Vie en Rose. Da, 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 da. And I said, I must be going crazy.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
I go to a food thing now. People like that segment, but it's true because it's real. I go to my favorite Chinese, the one that doesn't feel like I just ate crazy glue when I leave. You know what I'm saying? That's how I judge Chinese restaurants. Either it's either a CG or a non-CG. Not MSG anymore. It's crazy glue. Because the real bad ones, you walk out, you lipstick together, you start to talk like Bonnie Tang. Average Chinese restaurant you leave today, you get to sound like Bonnie Tang. So I go to my favorite place where it's not like a crazy glue sauce. And the food was excellent, but I noticed something. If I order the seafood clay pot in this place, which I did, they cut back on the seafood by the number of shrimp, and they added tofu, which I hate. I can't stand fried tofu. I hate it. I don't like tofu to begin with. What's with the tofu? The reason they ate tofu is they didn't have meat. What do you think they ate tofu for a million years in China? Or 2,000, 5,000? What do you think is better for you? You believe that baloney? The rich ones ate meat when they can get their hands on it, or a duck or a fish. It was the poor, the peasants in the field. You let them eat tofu. So now I have to engage myself. Like, the point is, though, they're cutting back on the protein. I went to another place, a cheaper Chinese restaurant, local. And, it's another, the dim sum that I ordered before the meal. Normally it was four pieces in an order. Now it was three. I said, wait a minute, am I imagining? Because if you're eating with someone, you get two each. So now you each have one, and already I'm a fast eater. I want the next one before the person I'm eating with already ate the first. I want the third. And it's gone. You don't know what to do. You can't split a dim sum in half. It sticks to the chopstick. What I'm getting at is they're cutting back. It's like three-quarter value now. So I'm cooking at home more. In fact, I had fun this morning. I bicycled to a food implement store, like these fancy stores that won't be in business soon, with stuff that nobody needs, you know, kitchen items that nobody wants or needs. My mother had a kitchen with a few pots in it and pans with four burners, an electric stove, in a tiny kitchen. In fact, you can see a picture of it in a previous book of mine. She could knock out five restaurant meals for one at one sitting on those little electric burners with aluminum pots. And wonderful, incredible meals, complicated. Today you go into a house, a $10 million kitchen that's never been cooked in. Never been. In fact, if someone cooked in it, they might have to renovate the kitchen. The average house in Tiburon, California, are you kidding me? Huh. What are you kidding? We don't cook in here. We just do freebase in here. Yeah. So the point is, I'm cooking at home more. So I go to this food implement store, and I bought something for myself that I've wanted for 20 years. It's not that it's expensive. It's just that I haven't gotten around to. You know what it is? Funny. It's like a kitchen weight. A cast iron weight that you put on top of a piece of chicken or a hamburger, so while it's cooking, the fat goes out of it. You know what I'm talking about? I've always wanted one. To me, that was like a cooking advanced cooking to have one of those. Anyone had like a kitchen weight? Because ever since I was a kid in Queens, if I would go to the luncheonette for a hamburger for lunch, I have to make this admission. I did have hamburgers at one point in my life. I know it's a crime against BO's administration. But they'd always have like on the griddle the weight to push the fat out into the. So I bought one of those, and to go with it, then there was an Italian thing that they were selling on the same order that was not cast iron. It was like 10 pounds, a circle of stainless steel, and it was like an Italian. They couldn't sell them, though. Everyone wanted the small it's a big round one that you sit on top. You put it on top of two steaks or on top of a chicken. You can make mate chicken, which is unbelievable. You cook in the weight, and then as it's cooking, the fat runs out. So I bought those things. They're in the boxes and the plastic, and I'll never use them. But I did it because I actually am starting to cook home more and more. I'll give you three reasons why I'm cooking home more and more. A, I hate driving. B, living in the Bay Area, I cannot stand listening to the drivel coming out of the mouths of moronic liberals. C, I don't want to hear the word Obama while I'm eating. I want to puke. I can't. I start to boil. I don't want to hear it. D, they're cutting back on the good protein. E, I don't know whether they're using melamine in some of the protein. D, I don't know how much of the produce or the garlic comes from China. I tend to buy only local Northern California produced everything from garlic to onions to carrots. It's got to be organic. I'll not buy any vegetable that's not noted. Its country of origin is not known. And restaurants, I don't know where it's, they don't know where it's coming from at all. And you don't have to drive. You can drink more. And plus, it's more interesting to eat at home. Why is it more interesting? I could watch a movie, or I could watch nothing. I could sit in silence. Who says you have to talk during a meal? You know, it's another thing I don't understand. Why do people scream in certain restaurants? There's a fish joint in San Francisco that's actually, it's been around forever. It's on California Street. I don't even remember the name of it. Very famous, mainly tourists. And like people who went to dumb schools like Harvard and Yale and prep schools, the way they learned to be morons and rob people. People without a conscience and without a soul basically go in there with bow ties. I've lived here for, I don't know how many years, 74, 84, over 30 years living in Gomorrah here, Sodom and Gomorrah. I've always walked past it. I've always looked in, and it always looks like a Good Time Charlie fish restaurant, like a New York fish house. But I don't go in because every time I do, it's so noisy, the noise blows you out of the door. But I ate there last week. It was good, except the noise was horrible. So I had to take the food home halfway through the meal. The question is, why do people scream in restaurants? Grown-ups. Is this an example of like children who grew up without any parental controls? Am I looking at this now? It must be like people in their 40s, now that I think about it. They were raised by hippie parents, and they don't understand you don't have to scream in a restaurant. Who knows? What am I talking about here? What's the difference? But how come my mother could cook so well on four electric burners and a little stove with aluminum foil underneath the... She put aluminum foil underneath the electric grate so it wouldn't stain the stove. You hear this? She had to preserve a stove that must have cost $92. But when you went in that woman's house, the little refrigerator, you couldn't walk past the stove, by the way. If she was cooking the little pantry kitchen, it was an embarrassment because... Do I have to spell it out for you the way people kiss in Northern California, the Marin kiss with the hips back in case someone should mistake? With the So to walk through the kitchen while your mother was cooking was an impossibility. It was the same with the dining room. The dining room was so small. God bless her. When she opened that up for Thanksgiving and you had 12 people around it, you risked a hernia, a rupture. You didn't know what you were going to get if you're walking with the objects from the hi-fi, they called there, with the pointy ends on the hi-fi. The blonde furniture came in. A point on it could emasculate you just going for the appetizer. You had to find a way to step over things to get around the people sitting at the table to go to the... Boy, do I miss it. I miss it because now you wind up alone with a TV tray watching Wolf Blitzer with a takeout turkey.
Savage.
Here's another story. Gannett to cut 1,000 newspaper jobs. They'll have to build new cafes just when Starbucks is going out of business. Just when Starbucks should stay in business for all of the out-of-work intellectuals who are going to be sitting in cafes with laptops sending hate mail to a talk radio shows who will still be here when they're gone, the coffee shops are closing. 1,000 newspaper people will be fired. Payroll. Instead of changing their policies and starting to appeal to the readers, again, they won't change course. They won't change editorial course. They keep the same anti-American, anti-military, anti-police, anti-family, pro-gay, pro-terrorist editorial policies, and they can't put two and two together. I could save any newspaper in this country in 90 days. I could save any newspaper in this country in 90 days if only they gave the people what they want. You know, they say, there used to be a statement, if you build a better mousetrap, people will beat a path to your door. You know, it's 100% true. I can name 5 people I know who built a better mousetrap who are very wealthy today. They came into a marketplace flooded, and they created a new product within that marketplace, and they became successful. I'm an example of it. The marketplace was filled with talkers when I got here. People said it could never be done. They said my accent was too New York. They said I could never overcome the liberal bias. Well, how did I do it? Because I gave the people what they want to hear, because I believe it down to the last molecule of DNA in my body. I'll give you another example. I complain, and too much, I complain far too much about food on this show. I admit it. In going through the stories from my autobiography and looking at what the proofreader sends back to me, and she's a young lady in another state who doesn't know me at all, I realize that I seem to spend a lot of time on food. I become my mother, in essence. Those of you who listen to the show get the joke. I don't mind if I became my mother. I loved her dearly. But there's a bigger point to it. I'm obsessed with food, with decent food. I don't mean great food. I'm not into fancy restaurants. I don't have the patience. I don't sit like a decadent slob over whether they tossed something with a certain this or that. I can't take it. I didn't grow up that way. I don't care whether it delights me. I care whether it's excellent quality and it's cooked right and it's fabulous. I don't need to see whether some chef with an earring and running open sores on his neck made something that he learned in a cooking school from some other moron. It doesn't do a thing for me. French Laundry they run to. To sit there like a putz and they come, oh, I ate in there. Well, how was? Oh, you should see. It took me 2 years to get the resume. Oh, and what did they get out of it? That you can't get anywhere else. But you can't cook yourself. Nothing but hot air. It's part of the decadence of the society we're living in. This stupidity and foolishness. I ate an X restaurant. I am so fed up with restaurants. I went to the Subway sandwich shop today. I stood online like every other moron. Just stood with the morons. I became a moron. Loved it. No, I didn't love waiting. It was jammed. Why is it jammed? Why is the Subway sandwich store jammed? I saw they were running an ad that sandwich is $3.99 for an extra buck. It's a foot long. So I said, you know what? I can't take restaurants anymore. That was after the Chinese poisoning the other day. The lip sticking. When she looked in my face and tongue lashed me. screaming at me, how come you're saying it's grease? There's no grease on it. That's like the guy who gets caught in bed with another woman, and his wife comes home, and he looks at the wife and says, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? I'm sitting in the restaurant, the dish is coated with grease, and she says, no grease in the food! Why you say grease? Cook don't make grease! She knows me 20 years, tells me there's no grease. I took my finger, put it on this piece of chicken, and ran it across a napkin. It looked like a snail walked across the napkin. I threw the money down and said, here, I'm paying. You don't pass it, I pay. That was it. 20 years, goodbye. So I go to Subway sandwich store, make it quick. Finally, I get on, it's my turn. The only part I couldn't take were the people with cell phones ahead of me. I wanted to break this. I did have anger management problems in there. I got to admit it. Three men I wanted to grab their wrists and take their cell phones and throw them in the mayonnaise. Not the man, the cell phone. And tell him, shut up and stop talking like a chick. Shut your mouth. Take the cell phone out of your hand. You sound like a stupid teenage girl. You sound like Lindsay Lohan. Can't you shut up? There are people online here. Shut up! I didn't say it. I had to control it. I did almost leave once. I did almost grab the phones twice. But I didn't. I finally managed to get to the counter. And you know what? The service was great. There's five people. Now look at the value you get for $5. This is not an infomercial. They don't advertise on the show. I'm making a bigger point. Okay, foot-long tuna. So the first guy puts five scoops of tuna fish with mayonnaise on it. I know the mayonnaise is no good for me. Great. Now, just the vegetables alone that they put on were worth the $5. If you just want a vegetarian sandwich, it's worth it. I have half the sandwich sitting here. I can only eat a half a sandwich. Now, that means that two people can eat lunch for $5, a half a sandwich each. I'm a big eater. I can only eat a half of the sandwich. The other half is sitting here in the refrigerator. And I hope it will still be here in the year 2010 for someone who tries to steal it, as is very common in radio stations around the country. Everyone knows if you leave your food in the refrigerator, it will be stolen. At least it was in my experience in a radio station. So I guess I wanted to see what it's like to be poor again. And I decided that if Obama wins and he taxes us to death, and does what I'm sure he's going to do, which is reduce the wealth of the nation to ashes. You know what? I'll survive one way or the other. I know how to eat a Subway sandwich. I could eat in a fine restaurant. I prefer the sandwich to the restaurant. I have very fine cars, some very expensive. And my favorite car is my least expensive car. It happens to be a Chevrolet camper van conversion with a television in it and captain's chairs. And this weekend, you know what? I put aside the expensive cars, because no matter how you try to say you don't know what you're driving, you do know what you're driving, and you are making a statement. The fact is they're great cars. They're wonderful cars, but they're a little too ostentatious and over the top, even though they're wonderful, and people look at them, and you have to put up with that. In the camper van, no one looks at you, because they figure, who's the schmuck in the van there? And that's good. Room for the dogs, cooler full of food built in. I drove out to the beach, actually not to the beach, but to Highway 1 North. I haven't been there in 20 years, out on Highway 1 in Northern California to play like Nick's Cove and Eddie's this and like a little place. And, I got a fish thing and took it in the car. The dogs ate French fries. They went off their diet. It was a pleasure. Nobody bothers you. So if Obama turns it into a Marxist nation, I'll survive. I will learn how to play dominoes as they do in Cuba. I will probably have to give my van over to, because it's 2 years old and it's far too new for a white man in America. I'll probably have to turn my van over to a bureaucrat under Obama to be used for a government work. And, so I'll buy an old Volkswagen like I once had, and I'll eat in Subway, and that'll be that. Savage. Over the years, I've talked about the astonishing ascension of the Muslims in the 7th century. I've done it over and over again about the most amazing story of conquest in the whole history of the human race. And it was about the smashing of the Byzantine army, etc., and I went on. But I then went on to tell you that after the Arabs had conquered a goodly portion of the world, including the Persians, and you don't know that the Persians at the time were not originally Muslim. They moved forward into up to China, and they knocked over Egypt, et cetera, and they went on and on and on. Then eventually the Arab advance was stopped for good by the French at the Battle of Poitiers, but that's because they had a different kind of Frenchman then than they do today. And then, of course, the point I am getting at is that after this conquest, interesting things occurred, which was the wonderful effect upon the human race after the wars by the Arab intelligence, because the Arab intelligence had been flung across the world more swiftly and dramatically than had the Greek mind 1,000 years before. And as a result, the whole world west of China was intellectually stimulated, breaking up old ideas and developing new ones. It was enormous. And so in Persia, the Arabic mind came into contact with the Zoroastrian and the Christian doctrines, with the scientific Greek literature. And it was found not only in Greek, but in Syrian translations. The Arab mind found Greek learning in Egypt. And then in Spain, strangely enough, the Arab mind found an active Jewish tradition of speculation and discussion, and they worked together. In Central Asia, the Arab mind met Buddhism and the material achievements of the Chinese. It learned the manufacture of paper, and they learned how to make printed books from the Chinese. And then it came in touch with Indian mathematics and philosophy. And you know what happened? The intolerant self-sufficiency of the early days of faith, which made the Quran seem the only possible book, was soon dropped by the Muslim. And learning sprang up everywhere in the footsteps of the Arab conquerors. By the 8th century, there was an educational organization throughout the whole Arabized world. In the 9th century, learned men in the schools of Cordoba in Spain were corresponding with learned men in Cairo, Baghdad, Bukhara, and Samarkand. The Jewish mind assimilated very readily with the Arab, and for a time the two Semitic races worked together. What I am telling you is that by the 9th century, the Muslim had become a progressive, advanced mind. And right now we have retrograde throwbacks, such as Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in Iran, who are actually pre-9th century Muslim in what he says, where he tries to impose the Quran upon the world. That was dropped by the 9th century when they lived with others. So what I'm telling you is that the average Muslim knows this. The average Muslim knows this, that there are throwbacks who are trying to drag the world back, not to the 9th century, but to the 7th century. And that is why you must fight them with everything in you, particularly if you are a woman or if you are gay. You must join me in this battle. It's the last battle there is on this earth. There will never be another one like it.
Savage.